If summer doesn't sing in you, then nothing sings in you. And if nothing sings in you, then you can't make music.
Come on, Ellie, let's take a ride. I was about to pop in some Verdi.
La donna mobile, qualcuno al vento, mutata cento, e di pensier.
Maybe I'll check out France.
Andiamo, notteiamo, la funiculi, 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 funiculi.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy.
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
All right, welcome back, Bam Fam. Happy New Year. It's time to talk another release from 2023, though. It's Maestro. One brought to us by Netflix and Bradley Cooper and Steven Spielberg and Martin Scorsese and a lot of other people. This is one that we've not put off for a while, but since it wasn't theatrical wide release, we got to the theatrical wide release ones, and here we are. We got to hit a few more before the end of the year. So make sure you're subscribed to the show and become a VIP as well, because 2024, fellas, has a lot of anniversaries, retrospectives. I guess in the VIP, we revealed this. I don't know if we have on the main feed, but we are doing a Tarantino retrospective in the VIP this year.
I'm excited. I've never seen a Tarantino film, so this will be a good time.
Yet I host a film podcast. I'm not good at it. I'm not.
No, that was literally our first episode was a Tarantino movie, so it'll be fun. Right. To dive in through his entire filmography month by month. It'll be cool.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll have an extra tier on the Patreon that's just same retrospective, but just about Feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Feet and Tarantino movies.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly what they said. So go to madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. Make sure you're subscribed. All right. Maestro, it is. Bradley Cooper, writing, starring, directing, and, you know, probably editing this thing, cinematographer, everything. Bradley Cooper's fingerprints on it for this one. Let's toss it to Richard first, because I know you're the classical musical guru other than myself show. So I know, how much were you anticipating this and general thoughts?
Yeah, heard about this for a few years, loved Star is Born, so was really interested in Cooper as filmmaker, as he kind of changed from, you know, the first incarnation of his self into, you know, like maybe, oh, is this going to be like the Robert Redford of our time or the Eastwood of our time? And so, you know, and then I'd heard about this film because Spielberg was going to make it for years. I love Leonard Bernstein. I find him a very fascinating person. But it also is a really cool story about that era of like New York City and a lot of different things there. And I had heard for years from like a lot of people in the know, including like this year, we talked about it on that one of those podcasts with Affleck when he was promoting Air. He was like, that's the best script I've ever read. I don't know if it was the Josh Singer one because Bradley Cooper did a rewrite on this. So the post-owned Josh Singer wrote this and then Bradley Cooper changed it. And they both have screenwriting credit, I believe. And I think it was a collaborative. I know it's a different film than what Spielberg wanted to do originally.
Yes. Spielberg and Bradley Cooper were talking about it on, I guess, some screening.
Yeah.
At Q&A. And Bradley Cooper said basically they had the script, but as they were shooting, they would get an idea for a scene. And if they could work it in, they would. So I think that, you know, they were open to improvising if need be.
Mm-hmm. And all the buzz going into this was, but they improvised to the point where Cooper has like a screenwriting credit too, which is not hard.
Exactly.
Which is hard to get if you're just improvising, right? Just because of unions and things like that. So I think there was at least some actual like tangible writing as well. Because he came on this kind of late. Cooper did, you know, it was kind of in development forever. Yeah, it was a movie it was probably my most anticipated Oscar type film of the year. I thought this could be great. Such an interesting thing. Saw the trailer. I was like, that looks a little more biopic-y than I expected, only because this was sort of talked about and presented as not a biopic, more of a real cinematic achievement that celebrates this great, you know, American artist and It's like, that kind of seems kind of by the note. And then you start hearing so much about the how great Carey Mulligan is in this film. And, okay, that's cool. And that happens a lot with the biopic genre. You think about, it made me think a lot of Reese Witherspoon winning the Oscar for Walk the Line, right? It's like, it's like the cool take to be like the person playing the person the movie's about is not interesting. Let's talk about the other person. Not necessarily, a lot of times very much warranted, but like it's kind of on the nose to, you know. And so anyway, saw it a couple weeks ago, been thinking about it a lot. And yeah, it's a really uneven movie. It's funny, the parts to me that are the most structured, you know, the big set pieces, the things that read probably the biggest in the script, the things that Cooper was probably so excited to act and direct, a lot of those fell pretty flat for me. It was the little moments that made this interesting that almost seemed, I don't know if they're written or improvisational, but those kind of like conversational party scenes where he kind of really, I didn't know Leonard Bernstein, so I can't say it's like accurate, but it feels like this human person, you know, where he's like maybe flirting with someone or having this kind of interest in this kind of frantic brain of his that's like moving constantly. Those scenes really worked for me, and I thought that's electric. That's something I haven't seen before in a biopic, because that doesn't feel like Look How Me. But then so much of the rest of the film does feel like that, and kind of is like, yeah, it's fine. I get it. Like you're going for that Oscar. Like it's so Oscar-y, all of that. I also didn't care for like, the first, I thought the black and white was just so like, oh, we get it. Like it's the early years have to look different than all that. And also that stuff of him kind of falling into the role of maestro for the New York Philharmonic. That felt a little, you know, and also his, you know, initial meeting Carey Mulligan, and also his, you know, his sort of partner and boyfriend at the beginning of the film. And I blank on the actor's name. What could I say? I thought he was excellent, but I thought a lot of that fell a little flat. So, no pun intended again. Everything's musical. So, but yeah, it's that just seems so like in the worst ways. And I feel like my role on this is to like on this show is to critique Spielberg. Obviously, he's a genius, the most important director ever. But it's like was so on the nose Spielbergian to me that first hour of like, here's how you're supposed to feel. Here's all the exposition. The music note's going to hit that. It's in black and white. Get it? Because this is early in his life, and he's going to come into color, and that's going to be cinematic of a new life, all of that. I don't know. To me, it was like the worst parts of Spielberg. Again, the great genius of American cinema, but all the worst parts of him in some ways. And so, yeah. So this will be definitely not like a bottom 10 movie I saw this year, but certainly is like probably my most disappointing movie, which is on me. I was just really excited at the subject matter. Loved Cooper's one foray in the directing, thought it was really showed a lot of promise. And this doesn't dissuade me from him, but like this was trying so hard. You know, there was a funny tweet this week that's like they showed the scene of him, you know, conducting the Mahler. That was the other thing I was really excited about. All the promo for this for the last year and a half, I've heard Cooper talk about all the Mahler. Mahler is my favorite composer. So I was just really excited to hear that music, all of that. I will admit, I saw this on Netflix. That probably would have been more stirring in a theater. I wish I could have gotten there and done it. So I won't critique that, but I was not as moved by the music in parts as I thought I would be. But the scene of him really, you know, the Oscar scene of him, you know, for whatever reason, he learned how to conduct the 6-minute piece of music. And he's no Tar, you know, or Queen Tar. But he, It was like, which is a great, wonderful scene, but anyway, there was a great tweet of him, that scene, it was like, this is what happens when you lose to the Freddie Mercury movie. It's like, it just broke his brain to lose to Bohemian Rhapsody. And so now this is what he's doing for his Oscar, and which is diagnosable Amy Adams syndrome. So, you know, we're looking for a cure. And that's where all the Patreon money goes to. We're trying to find a cure for Amy Adams syndrome. Dozens are afflicted every year. But those are my initial thoughts. Sorry, I've been going on too long. I'll throw it over to Brian.
Go for it, Brian.
Yeah, I was excited about this. I was excited for the Bradley Cooper. Bradley Cooper is one of my favorite actors. We haven't really seen him doing much post A Star Is Born. Like every credit he has is, if you go to his IMDb, is voice or the cameo in Dungeons and Dragons, you know, I think he's a great actor, and I was excited to see the movie. I was also excited, honestly, because I knew you guys were excited about this. I don't know hardly anything. I mean, I know his name. I know I don't know that I could give you five bullet points.
The REM song.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I could have given you five bullet points on Leonard Bernstein before this movie. It's just not in my wheelhouse, but I know you guys were super, super stoked about it. And sometimes I really like coming in here, watching a movie and talking about a movie that you guys are excited about, or have knowledge on that I don't. I think that's something I actually really dig about the show. The trailer was fine. And then the reviews, as I say, I feel like I've said multiple times recently, so I'll try my best to stop saying it. I don't read reviews or listen to pods or anything like that on a movie before I have seen the movie, but I do kind of do just like a general vibe check on how things are going. And part of that is just coming from, I'm very active in our Discord, and so anybody who saw this movie before us, you're going to get some reactions on that in the various channels and stuff. It didn't seem like it was going great. And it reminded me a little bit. You said this, Richard, and that was my first thought, was this is kind of a two movies jammed into one movie kind of thing. It reminded me a little bit of Babylon last year, that where I really liked the movie making part of that movie a lot, like a lot, like A+ a lot. And I really hated most of the partying and debauchery, because it just felt like such a different movie. I don't hate anything in this movie, not like Babylon, but it does feel a little bit schizophrenic and self-serving, and it's a complicated one. It feels like a movie that is probably going to succeed in winning some major awards, and Kent sent over, I think, the last 10 best actors at the Oscars, and this falls right in line. So I would start putting money on it, just based on recent history. I think it's probably going to succeed in winning some awards. I think that it may succeed in kind of getting the monkey off of Bradley Cooper's back a little bit, not just if he succeeds in winning the Oscar, but also just in, this is clearly a passion project that he really wanted to see through. And so maybe that will kind of, maybe finishing that will kind of let him get back to making movies, just like actually doing movies. He's also, again, one of my favorite actors, love Bradley Cooper. Kind of weird lately, like kind of been weird in the actors roundtable stuff, and some of the vibe is maybe not great right now, I feel like. And so maybe some of this takes some pressure off and he can just get back to being kind of like a normal actor guy.
He's an Eagles fan, so blame that on.
There's that. There is that. I think it could succeed in both of those things and also kind of be a little bit of a failure in terms of making like a really good quality movie. I think this is a fine movie. The kind of pushback on like he's really, no one has ever wanted an Oscar more than Bradley Cooper does. I think there's some truth to that, but again, I would say Amy Adams does exist, so that is a factor that we have to play into this. And I think it's fair to say too, like, again, he lost the Oscar in 2018. I don't remember what I had on my fake ballot that year, but I definitely had him higher than the Oscars did, I think. So I guess you could say like, hey, this is the only time since then. We're 5 years out from that, and now COVID, blah 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 blah. We can forgive you one very shameless attempt at winning an Oscar. If this turns into a trend, then that becomes a bit of a different story. But yeah, it's I guess just to wrap that up, I think it is possible for the movie to be successful in some of its intentions, and also for it to not have been as good of a movie as it maybe should have been and as the subject matter dictated. So successful but unsuccessful at the same time for me.
Yeah, I think this is a person, Leonard Bernstein, that means enough to enough people that Bradley Cooper couldn't do this without going, unfortunately, for us, all in, like triple all in, like quadruple Daniel Day-Lewis times probably a little bit more all in on this person, considering he was directing the movie and partially writing it as well. So, you know, anytime you do that, it's gonna be a certain way. And he said he went to the New York Philharmonic four nights a week for 3.5 years to research this movie. I can't even comprehend that level of dedication to anything. And maybe I should try, see where it gets me, because Bradley Cooper is certainly further in life than I am. But, I mean, he was super invested in this role. He said when he was a kid, he wanted a conductor's baton for Christmas because he was so into Leonard Bernstein and just, you know, conducting in general and classical music. There's not much nuance to this, but at the same time, he's doing a movie about a real person and wanted to, I guess, do certain things a certain way. I thought this was fine. I was more impressed by Cooper's direction than I was his same performance. Like, if maybe it had been somebody else playing Leonard Bernstein, I'd be more into this, or it'd be less, a little less Oscar baity. Maybe he could bring a little bit more nuance into the role than he did. But I thought he directed the heck out of this. I'm kind of glad it had the different aspect ratios, different colors, just because it was easier to follow that way. I think if it was all one thing and you were doing the jumping back and forth, and maybe it would certainly feel a little bit, even if it feels a little bit Oscar baity, it's probably because he's just like, this is all I've been doing for 4 years is Leonard Bernstein. And so that's just the way it goes. I don't even think this gets much Oscar love, guys, though.
I don't think,
you know, either. Like, I think it's fine. I mean,
we'll see. The March,
it's certainly not in my top 10 of the year right now or anything like that, but you know, I wouldn't pencil this in for anything with how competitive this year has been on a lot of fronts. It wouldn't surprise me if it did, but it didn't feel like, after seeing this, like, oh, that's definitely gonna, you know, get some awards. I thought it can. Netflix will probably pay for some of that. But I thought it was a more of a love story kind of relationship drama than biopic type of thing going on. And I don't know if I would have preferred if they had leaned more one way or the other, gone the Priscilla route or the, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody route. But man, it is quite the undertaking, Richard, to the Mahler scene. And, you know, since it is the big kind of tentpole scene of the film, just watching that, I mean, the dedication, there is so much nuance. I mean, you can speak to this. There's so much nuance in conducting, right? You can't wave your arms.
No. But I would say other actors have, and I don't think people are like, they're not really conducting. But I think he set him up for that. I mean, if you look at something like Tar, or what was the one? The Mr. Bean one. That's like the most iconic one. But like, I don't know if Cate Blanchett truly learned to conduct for that role. However, the entire marketing campaign of that film was not, she learned to conduct for this role like this one was. Like, that seemed like a big piece of the messaging, you know, in a way that was like, oh, okay. When most people go, yeah, it looks like you could learn that as a dance, and it would take you 8 weeks and not 6 years or whatever he said it took. Like, there was some funny stuff. It's like, my guy, like, 8 hours a day? Like, did you just start with music theory and then work with that? Like, define the 6 years better.
Right.
Did you start and then take 3 years off and then start up again?
Yeah, maybe. I mean,
maybe.
It's, I don't know. Is it okay to be impressed by something but not be to not love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Yeah,
totally.
Like, I'm really impressed by rock climbing, but it in no way is something I want to do or anything like that, or want to watch or anything like that. I feel like that about this performance. Like, I'm extremely impressed by it, but not in a way that I feel like we should just be giving this guy every single Oscar.
Yeah.
That,
I mean, award. I might even take it so far as to say, I'm impressed by what you did here. I'm not sure I care.
Right.
So that's probably not great. And some of that's just biopic. I mean, it's just, yeah. It's hard to make a good, we saw a couple of good biopics this year. One being Oppenheimer, which is not an, non-traditional biopic. I saw The Iron Claw this weekend, and that's going to be, I think, our episode next week, so I won't spoil it, but, man, I loved it. It's kind of, it's a biopic as well. It's just, it is hard to do this kind of thing well because it's boring. Biopics are just generally kind of dull and basic and boring, and you respect when you're like, I mean, maybe that's part of it too. Is just like, well, I'm going to learn to conduct because I don't want this to be more. I want it to be done well. If I am passionate about this, then the passion will come through on the screen. And so, like, I think you said it well, Kate. Like, it is impressive, but also there's part of me that's just like, get out of your own butthole, dude. Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, when Brian Cox is talking crap about this kind of acting, then, and this isn't even like the method, in some ways, this is a different kind of method than what he was referring to, but it I think it probably applies. It's like, I don't know. I feel like there's probably better ways we can use our time. I don't know. Or maybe I would even just say, it's great that you want to do that, but that doesn't mean that I have to really care about it or love it, I guess.
Yeah, especially if it doesn't move you, or like, you know, at the end of the day, it's an emotional response. So like all the technique, right, in the right world, whether it's acting or directing or whatever, you know, is it going to raise to those heights that you're so obviously lofting towards?
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
And, but there, I do think the thing that makes this different than like some like pretty embarrassing versions of this type of movie is there are moments where he gets there and you go, that felt real. Agree. That was cool. Like, I felt like I know that person better now. It's just not for 2.5 hours.
You know what it reminds me of? Totally. Another movie that I was really impressed by, but you know, it was my thing, the Liberace movie with Damon. Wasn't Damon in that?
Yeah.
Damon and Michael Douglas. And Douglas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was an HBO movie, like Soderbergh did. Right. And it just, you're totally right, Kent. Like, that's a very good movie, and this isn't worse than that, but like the pretense of this one was like, this is cinema. Yeah. He went to the, you know, Michael Douglas didn't go, I started piano lessons.
Right.
All from scratch for 9 years to play Liberace. He was just like, yeah, just pretend like I was Liberace. Right. And then I, you know, did my other hobby. But, you know, it's just like when you set yourself up with that, if it doesn't fully land the plane, it's like it gets, everyone's eyes are rolling. Even someone like me who enjoyed large parts of this film.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I think it lands the plane in terms of being a good biopic about Leonard Bernstein. I agree. I don't think.
Sure.
If we're talking about this had to be shoo-in for the best full picture intent, or it's a failure, I don't know if that's. If he failed, I mean, of course he failed there, because I don't think this will even be nominated for best picture, probably. Yeah, I mean, so.
I think. I think that it's unfair to, in some cases, I think it's unfair to add like expectation and or aspiration to, like to kind of burden a movie with that. But this is definitely a case where everyone involved did that themselves. I mean, it's not us being like, well, it's not a best picture contender for us, so it's a disappointment. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to say. That's very clearly,
there's a line item, I guarantee you, in Netflix's budget for the Oscar campaign for this movie.
Yes.
15 months ago. So you can't get mad at us for that when you guys are, you know, that is an unfair, you know, this is not best picture, thus it is a failure. That is in a vacuum, of course, unfair, but like this has been treated for, again, 2 years as you know, the film, you know, his masterpiece, Cooper's masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And it's, if it is, then he has a good to very good masterpiece. But like, I don't think he's happy with that. Cause I think, I think he's aiming pretty high on like what he wants his next 10 years to be. And he's shown, I think Star is Born was a revelation with him as a director. I think it's a more consistent film than this. Cause I think it's written maybe a little, you know, it doesn't have that grandiose piece of it, but both films show someone that I think has a best picture in them as a director. It's just, I think everyone expected it to be this until like 4 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But doesn't mean he won't, his next one could be, you know, the greatest. He's really, you're right, Ken. I think this is really well directed in a lot of different ways.
You know, I like the juxtaposition between him and his Felicia. I don't know if it was editing or what, but some really impressive cuts between those people. I don't know how they did some of that. CG, maybe. I'd have to go back and, you know, frame by frame it to see how some of it was done, but it was, you know, for a guy who's, this is his second movie ever. This is a
totally.
It seemed like, you know, he did have Spielberg sitting next to him, like, you know, here's how you'll cut this montage or whatever. So that's what I said. I'm more impressed. My takeaway for this is, wow, Bradley Cooper could be the real deal director.
I think so too.
Because I like A Star Is Born and what I've seen here in terms of the you know, the pacing and all that.
Absolutely,
it was pretty good. So.
And I think it's weird. It's the scenes, like I said earlier, too, that like that aren't like the ones. Like, for example, the scene that sets up the Mahler piece, the Hate in Your Heart scene, right? Mm-hmm. Where she, okay, and then he hugs her at the end of the Mahler piece, and she goes, "There was no hate in your heart." Okay, that's a great scene. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's the, you know, of him conducting that really romantic moment or whatever, reconciliation. It's a very good scene. Everyone, that's the Oscar scene, whatever. The scene that sets that up, the fight, in the, I don't know if it's the house, if it's in a hotel room or the house, that's, I think, a much more compelling scene. I mean, they're just like really great in that. And that's like, again, those are those like little human moments that are throughout the film.
Wait, which one are you talking about? Which fight? Because there's a lot of them.
Sorry. No, there's a lot of them. The one that sets, where she says there's hate in your heart.
Yeah, the big one in their apartment.
The one at the parade? From,
like, Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's my favorite, probably my favorite scene in the movie.
It's an unbelievable scene. It's so well directed, it's so well acted, and all that.
I was wondering, I was like, they must have had screens outside the window with the balloons coming by. That looked so real. It looked like they were in the middle of the Macy's parade. Yeah. That was awesome.
It was super awesome. But, like, that to me is, like, that's the Oscar scene way more than the, like, what everything's being marketed as, like, look at, but to me, that's like the actor's kind of, not necessarily ego. I don't think it's like comes from that kind of place, but it's like this, I feel like he had that conducting scene in his brain 3 years ago when he started on this, 4 years on, and that's, you know, obviously he's working on that for 6 years for that to be the money scene. And it's just sort of like indicative of the entire film where it's like, that's not what I'm going to remember. I'm going to remember that beautiful Macy's parade scene that sets all that up. I think to me, that's like the masterpiece of the movie. And I think he probably thought of that 2 months before they started shooting. You know what I mean? It's like the little moments that work better than the big ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It could go a few different ways. I think it might be for the audience in a certain way to make them feel like they've been at this symphony in the, in the theater or at home or whatever, make them really feel
it's cool.
The energy of what that's like. I liked the way he did that though, with the big, you know, Letier shot, I should say, the real slow one with the reveal of Felicia at the watching him, you know, I didn't expect that. And that was,
it's based on real footage. Like there's a real shot of that kind of similarly with Bernstein. Yeah.
But, that certainly wasn't the thing I left thinking about, but it felt, you know, impressive in the moment. I was like, oh wow, he's really conducting the orchestra. I mean, you watch the orchestra and they're actually watching him as he's conducting, you know, he's like, he's really conducting a real orchestra there. It's not like they're playing to a track or anything like that. That's totally, totally great. So what this makes me feel like,
it's like a stunt though, almost. And like the drama, the built, you know, a great stunt in like a Tom Cruise movie is cool. But like, sometimes it's that scene that sets up, you know, when they start initiating the heist. That's like what is the cooler part of the movie. That's what it reminded me of.
So what it reminds me of is Tar, obviously. But Tar is like Jon Favreau's chef. And this is like Bradley Cooper's Burnt.
That's harsh. That's so harsh.
You just
we're trying tarred, to do the same thing. One does it with a lot more nuance and understanding than the other does. The other one's really going for it, and one wasn't. One was just trying to be, you know, just a movie. So rank these conductor movies, fellas.
Oh, now we're talking.
Maestro, Tar, August Rush, or Mr. Holland's Opus.
Oh, man.
Rank
what them. Are we ranking on their success as Top a movie four. Or as a meme factory? Because Tar, clear winner.
Tar,
well, August Rush, pretty good memes. I don't know
it if is.
You followed. And but Mr. Holland's Opus, great meme potential.
It does. We should get in and start putting those on Giphy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tar is like the Nikola Jokic of meme movies, where it's like, that's a late round draft pick that just really worked out. Like, we're still, there's still so much good Tar bits online a year later. It's such a movie you would never pick that would be bit worthy. Like, that's going to be a movie, like, weirdly, like, Jude is familiar with it. He'll never see it. That's the funny part. But, like, he'll know of Tar because of some weird meme or something in 15 years. Man, I don't know. I haven't seen Mr. Holland's Opus in a long time, but I remember liking it. Is it bad?
Well, it has Richard Dreyfuss, so.
I know. I was going to say.
Judge for yourself.
It does have the mom from Yes, Dear, though, right? I think.
Does have the, yeah, August Rush does have the weird kid from the Burton Wonka movie.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Isn't that the
kid? That show's gotten real meme heavy, too. The Good Doctor. There's a lot of
is that that same
on.
Guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Freddie Highmore?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not know it was the same guy. That makes total sense, though. I'm going one, Tar. Two, Maestro.
Uh-huh.
August Rush and Mr. Holland's Opus.
Okay.
Okay. That's tough for me. I think that I like the acting better in Tar. Tar made me feel stupid. This didn't make me feel stupid. Tar.
The dumbest part, stupidest part was the REM thing. I mean, come on. That was so dumb. I mean, you could be listening to the song or REM the band, but for him to be listening to the line of Leonard Bernstein as he's driving up, like, really, yeah. Brad?
Yeah.
You were doing a good job until that moment. You know,
what's a weirder ending? Tar directing video game music or 90-year-old Leonard Bernstein in a Miami nightclub dancing into the credits?
It's pretty odd. Pretty odd either way.
that was
Tears for Fears.
I think some of the like general disassociation people have after this movie ends is can be laid at the foot of that choice. Because it's pretty, you're with it, and then you're just like, I mean, maybe that's accurate. Maybe he just really partied it up after his wife died, but it's such a jarring, and then it like pauses, like at the end of Cool Runnings or something, and then just credits. That was so bizarre. End of
Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings? How could you remember the ending of Cool Runnings?
I've seen Cool Runnings 7,000 times. Yeah. Cool Runnings is my Tar.
Oh, okay.
I don't know what that means.
All right. Looking at my notes here. Got in the August Rush and Mr. Holland's Opus jokes. Good. Okay. Sweet. All right.
That's it.
Carrie Mulligan's really
good. She's great. Yeah, she's great.
She is good.
I'm with Richard that it did seem a little odd that it, not even odd, it felt very
movie hipster.
Yeah, an early 2000s film. Early 2010s film nerd Twitter of like, to ignore the main performance and not even the male female part of it. Just like, but what about this was a revelation over here, you know? It's like, I mean, she's very good. She's always been she's a very good
one of the best actresses alive. I mean, yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, she is great. I think one of the reasons why that performance, maybe you come out of it feeling like it resonated a little bit more, is because I think a lot of the emotional connection of the movie is to her. And in some ways, I give Bradley Cooper, the director, a lot of credit for making those scenes go that, giving her the space to like have that be the main focus of those sections. But then also I detract even a little bit more away from Bradley Cooper, the actor, because I feel like some of his Oscar heaviness kind of negates the opportunity to emotionally connect with his own movie. It's kind of an odd thing, but I thought she was very good. And of the two performances, hers is the one that I would lean at this point towards on an Oscar kind of thing, more so than the Bradley Cooper part.
Other full nitpick on that, like, I expect that from audiences, because it's true, like, she's better in this than him overall. She's a great actress. The billing her first thing is the most like faux humble, like, right. I don't know that, like, Bradley, you're going so big for the Oscar on here. You directed right. The movie's called Maestro. It's about a conductor. Go ahead and just throw yourself billed first. Like, right. No, it's really about her. It's like, it's not actually really about her. She's great in it. She's awesome. It's about Leonard Bernstein.
Well, and you could sell me on that before I saw the movie, maybe, you know, but then I see the movie, I'm like, no, it isn't. It's super duper not. And because because the actor version of you was not having that conversation at all. The director may have been, but the actor part of you was not. So, but she's great. By the way, Hollywood Reporter has this is post Christmas. Mm-hmm. So about a week old, but has this in the running on best picture, best actor, best actress, and best screenplay, like in the, you know, the top five or the top 10.
Yeah, I think the long Oscar season will be kind of this too, because that gets him out there really doing his the movie star thing.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
currently has him as the director as outside the top five, which is annoying.
That's funny. Yeah. We would have probably done it.
The direction's much better on this than the performances personally. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, I agree. I think she's great. She, you know, comes out once every 10 years, wins an Oscar, and goes back into her Mumford hole and
I always forget till
the next
that.
Till the next one comes around.
She starts pounding that kick drum for Marcus.
She so does
write a new Ted Lasso song. Yeah.
It's still one of the best things they have any band's ever done was having that Forte music video.
Hopeless Wandering
with Sudeikis and
just wish it had been like Sandberg instead of
Ed Helms.
Ed Helms.
That would have been, but he heard there was an upright bass in it and just showed up.
He actually did that for free, and they got to use all of his equipment that he had at his house. So kind of had to.
Well, let's hit a grade here, fellas. I'm gonna go straight B. What about you, Richard?
I'm going to go B minus. Give this like an 82. Wow.
Brian.
I thought it would be the lowest of you, and I think I turned out the highest. I'll go a light B plus.
Nice.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, we shall see then. If this does get any noms, maybe we'll talk about it again in some context. So stay tuned for that. But until then, let's hit a weekly recommend, fellas.
Weekly recommends.
All right, what you got? Richard?
This book, it's called Generations. It's by Gene Twenge, I believe, PhD. It's all about the difference. It's like a pop psych book about, you know, Gen X v. Boomers v. But like actually really thought through and not just what we all whine about each other about. It's a really interesting book about if you all think in any kind of specialty work around like any kind of like, this is not the intent of the book, but if you're in any kind of like marketing or really thinking about how to, you know, what a persona is, who your target audience is and any type of creative work or scientific work, even things like that, is a really great book to kind of cite and to think about. The differences in generations, obviously, and the book makes sure it pre-qualifies a ton. These are not like universe, you know, there's obviously exceptions to every rule, but it does really create that context and kind of thought starters for how to talk to different audiences differently based on kind of what the world was like as they grew up or whatever. So yeah, it's called Generations, Gene, G-E-A-N, Twenge, T-W-E-N-G-E, I believe. She's a doctor.
Awesome.
Good pop sociology there for you.
Nice, nice.
Brian, what you got?
I'm going to recommend a book as well. I'm still not quite finished with it, but I'm enjoying the read, so I'll roll with it. This may have been a Richard Weekly recommend at some point. It's called The Devil's Candy by Julie Salomon. It's about the making of The Bonfire of the Vanities.
Brian. Okay. I did recommend the book, The Bonfire of the Vanities, though.
Oh, okay. That's right. That's what I'm thinking.
That's what it was. That was my big, like, giant fiction book I read, like, all last spring, because it's a million pages. But, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. This is, look, it's in the Audible Plus catalog, which I love. I love when you find a book and I don't have to spend the credit on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a great little find. But, yeah, it's I'm curious when I finish it, I'm going to do a deep dive on like how did we get all this information? Cause it is a lot. It is a lot of firsthand knowledge and quotes and all this kind of stuff about this movie, which is, if you don't know, is one of the biggest flops of the decade. And like in another world could have ruined careers and stuff. Maybe you could argue kind of did with De Palma. But yeah, Brian De Palma directing, Tom Hanks, Morgan Freeman, Melanie Griffith, just a plethora of well-known actors and actresses. It's a huge book, huge bidding war to get the rights to make the movie, all this kind of stuff. And it turned out to be one of the biggest flops of the decade. And I've read a lot of this kind of these books about behind the scenes on movies, or more frequently on like era of movies and things like that. We've over the years, the three of us, we've recommended several of those movies.
Yeah.
It is mega in-depth, man. Like, there is so much information here.
Interesting.
I'm
going to read that so hard. So, thank you so much for that.
Yeah, dude.
It was just for me. Yeah.
I really enjoy it. And I think I'm going to do in the VIP this year is I'm going to try to do a half dozen or so episodes, like bonus episodes, where I just go watch a movie I've not seen before. And try to do like a short solo episode on it, or like bring in one of you guys or a guest or something like that, just to like have extra conversations about some movies that maybe don't warrant like our throwback attention necessarily, but just another like, oh, okay, this could be an interesting one to talk about for a few minutes. And I'm going to do this because I've never seen Bonfire of the Vanities. So I'm going to go back and watch that after I finish this movie and do a little bonus episode on it in the VIP. So. If you're interested in that, if you want to hear more of me, I can't imagine why, you know, subscribe over there. But yeah, really good book, Devil's Candy, Julie Salomon.
All right. I'm going to recommend a doc. Have you guys seen this Milli Vanilli doc yet?
Still on my to watch list because Lindsay is very interested in that. We haven't had time to
watch it. Man, it's great.
Nice.
So check it out.
Very nice.
It's called Milli Vanilli. But yeah, it's about them.
Awesome.
The whole saga. And, you know, what it really is more of a loophole in the industry than it was like any fault of two dudes,
mm-hmm.
which was they basically got taken advantage of by a producer. But it's a very good doc. This is well done. So check it out.
Awesome.
Milli Vanilli. All right. There you go. Check out the VIP this week as we talk Dodgeball, starring Ben Stiller, Vince Vaughn, all of your favorites from the 2000s. And we'll be back next time at the cinema. Bye.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah-yah. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.